Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, welcome everyone. I'm going to start today's show by reading a quote from an interview that appeared in the LA Times on March 1st, 2006. And this quote comes directly from today's guest, and she says this: "In the beginning, God was woman, and from her womb she created all that is. Thus, she is all things, and all things are her." That was true 30,000 years ago, and for millions, it is still true today. Well, what do you believe? Do you believe, as does my guest, that the feminine consciousness is the missing piece of today's spiritual, cultural, and political puzzle? Let's find out. Karen Tate is an independent scholar of the sacred feminine with an emphasis on the roles of women and the study of comparative religions and ancient cultures within a contemporary context. She's a prolific writer and speaker, as well as an ordained minister. Karen Tate's most recent work blends her experiences of women-centered multiculturalism evidenced in mythology, archaeology, and anthropology. Her work has been featured in the LA Times, Seattle Times, and other major newspapers, and she's been a regular on National Public Radio and hosts Voices of the Sacred Feminine. She writes that her first book was 20,000 years in the making. She's now traveled the world to write two books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing the Goddess. Welcome, Karen Tate.
Well, hello, Vicki. Thank you so much for having me on the show. What a wonderful intro.
Well, pleased to have you here. You've certainly done a lot, seen a lot, accomplished a lot in your life. And you've dedicated, I know, the last 20 years to feminine consciousness. But it hasn't always been that way for you. I want to just go back and look at how this evolved for you. I heard you say that you grew up in New Orleans in the Bible Belt. You were raised in the Catholic faith. What happened, Karen?
Well, you know, no one's more surprised than me, quite frankly, because I did spend most of my early years in school, with the influence of the Catholic faith. I liked nothing more than the nuns and, that warmth and support that they sort of personified with the church. But, you know, the religion itself really didn't do much for me. It just, you know, didn't seem right. I was sort of born into it, but didn't really feel it. It wasn't really a reality for me, I guess you could say. And when I moved out to California and broadened my horizon, so to speak, I started to discover the goddess. And the goddess wasn't talked about in New Orleans in the Bible Belt. You know, even on the college level at the University of New Orleans, you know, they may have had classes on, you know, classical Greek myth and addressed the goddess from that perspective, but it really wasn't talked about in terms of the role she played in history and how relevant she was at the center stage in, you know, the early part of humankind's existence. And when I came to California, I rubbed shoulders with different people. I was exposed to new ideas. I picked up two books that really changed my life, I'd say, and introduced this concept to me and validated it for me. And those two books were Rhian Eisler's Chalice and the Blade and Merlin Stone's When God Was a Woman. And when I discovered that there was a feminine face of God, there was a feminine face of God, you know, tens of thousands of years ago before a male God, you know, it was just sort of, it clicked for me. It was like this inner wisdom or this personal truth, and it was a slippery slope after that.
Why do you think that isn't discussed even at college level? Because I know I was in my late 30s when I went back to school and took a mythology class, and this is when I learned about goddesses other than the classical Greek gods, which I did at school.
Well, I think it's because of the culture that we live in. You know, we live in a Judeo-Christian culture. The patriarchy and monotheistic male-dominated religion has worked for thousands of years to obliterate the power of goddess, and by doing so, diminish the role of women in cultures, in society, in spirituality, and it's programming. It's as simple as that. It's about power, and it's about politics. And I think we all just, you know, we drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, you know.
Right.
It becomes truth because we're told it so many times, you know, from the pulpit, you know, from these external forces that are out there in society. And it becomes the only truth rather than just a piece of the truth.
Now, I want to read a passage from an essay that you wrote, and let's discuss that.
Okay.
And the essay is Priestessing Goddess Onto the World Stage, We Can No Longer Afford to Be Invisible, and this is by the Reverend Karen Tate. And she writes, "Some in the women's community snickered, and others were fearful for me when I first named my ministerial path as Emissary Priestess of Isis. Yet I sensed even in those early days that it was up to us to priestess God back onto the world stage. I believed we could no longer afford to be invisible. We had to share our spirituality with the rest of the world and reclaim our rightful place alongside the recognized traditional religions on the globe. I wanted to be one of the many needed ambassadors in her rebirthing into the mainstream world." And I first of all want to ask you about the opening sentence there when you said that you named your ministerial path as Emissary Priestess of Isis.
Well, what I meant by that was when I first felt called to goddess spirituality, to finding a feminine face of God, the first goddess that really piqued my curiosity and I felt a relationship with was the Egyptian goddess Isis. It's hard to say why, I'm certainly not from that part of the world, but she just had a powerful impact on me. And I don't know whether it was a past life thing, because as early as 4 or 5 years old, I can remember sitting there looking at picture books of ancient civilizations. I was mesmerized by Egypt, by Pompeii. So it felt like a good fit for me. And I sort of look at Isis as like a universal goddess, because I honestly don't think, goddess, well, we say goddess has 10,000 names and 10,000 faces because of her diversity, but really there's one divine essence. We sort of just personify her, with different names and different faces in different cultures. And Isis was the one that spoke to me.
Okay. And a bit further down on the essay, you say we could no longer be content to practice our spirituality just underground. And again, you wanted to be an ambassador for rebirthing into the mainstream world. What do you mean by that?
Well, going back to what I said, earlier in the conversation, we're living in this patriarchal world dominated by monotheistic male gods. This is, to some people, this is the direct opposite of that. This is an opposition to that. This is a threat to them because, we're saying, your God is not the only God. We're saying that there was a feminine face of God. Remember God's wife? The one that was worshipped alongside Yahweh on the Temple Mount? There once was a goddess. And there's been, going back thousands of years, there's been this this concentrated effort to do away with her. Again, about power, about politics. It's almost about, the gender war too. So it's not the mainstream. It's not traditional. And sometimes it's difficult to buck the status quo. But we see where the world, has come to. We see how this chaos, this imbalance, the spiraling out of control, and we think part of that is because we haven't had the balance of the masculine and feminine energy side by side, complementing each other, tempering each other, And the powers that be, the status quo, well, they like it just fine if they're benefiting from the way things are in the world. But more and more we're seeing that this culture is really about the needs of the few, not the many. And goddess spirituality is really the opposite. It's about the needs of the many, not the few. And when you put those two together, all the boats, the tide rises and all boats float, if you know what I'm saying. So I hope that sort of answers your question.
It does. And you say that you call patriarchal religions toxic propaganda, but you also say that the power of the goddess is empowering and important for both men and women. You're not excluding men in that.
Oh, absolutely not, because it's very important. I mean, men embrace goddess spirituality, and sometimes you don't even realize you're embracing goddess spirituality. You know, there are a lot of people, who care about education, who care about poverty, that care about, equality, justice. Well, you know what? Those are ideals of the sacred feminine. You know, you look at Lady Libertas. She's sort of an icon of the political goddess, and everything she stands for are ideals of goddess. So when people start to really understand what goddess represents, they go, you know what? I believe in that too. I'm a goddess advocate.
Right. And we've had several three key patriarchal religions for the past several thousand years. What makes this the right time for the resurgence of the creative feminine consciousness?
Well, we think it's the time for the resurgence because most people can't remember when it's been much worse. Things are really getting out of control. I have a whole article about it on my website, the Emerging Feminine Consciousness. But especially here in the United States, things are really bad on so many different levels. And, it's been, for way too long, it's been more about the needs of the few and not the many. We see war, across the globe for profit. People go into war and shedding other people's blood, to put money in selected people's pockets. This sort of paradigm, this power over, dominator, let's get away with it as we, if we can, anything for a dollar, this greed, exploitive mentality, people are getting tired of it. And I think that's why there's been so much interest in Barack Obama, for instance, because he's offering the ideas of hope and change because people don't want to keep going down this path. They see how many people are being hurt and being left behind, because of the way the world is being run and the priorities that seem to be, the benchmarks of our leaders.
Right. You say that we have hope for a better future by reawakening the hidden history of our ancient past. So if there was a mass movement away from our patriarchal society, from God-driven society to goddess, what would that look like, Karen?
Well, there are different ways to look at it, and of course, this isn't written in stone. But first of all, I want to emphasize that we wouldn't do away with God. It would be God and goddess together, complementing each other, tempering each other. It's like a good marriage, when you have a good coupling, the two mm-hmm. complement each other, and they're a successful duo. So you think of it like that to begin with. The first thing I think that we would start looking at, and I've said this a couple times, but I guess it bears repeating, is the needs of the many. Right now everything is geared toward what's best for the corporation, not what's best for the people. We have more new millionaires here in the United States than we ever have, and the middle class and the lower class are sinking lower and lower. Our education system is getting worse and worse. We look at the people in Congress, and they're getting away with murder. They're getting away with treason. These this is not the way things are supposed to be. You know, the Constitution is being trashed. You know, we want to get back to some sanity, to a time of, you know, when we feel like there's hope, that there's, you know, that there's justice, that there's equality, that we, you know, we put priorities on the table like peace, education, doing away with poverty. We would have equality between the genders. We would restore women to the center of society. And, you know, things like domestic violence, well, you know, these things would be unheard of. You know, we need to rethink what has come to be the norm and set benchmarks to elevate ourselves, to raise our consciousness, to expect more from each other, to be in service, not be in power necessarily, because we all know that to be in power, to dominate others, it always leads to corruption. But if we had this mentality that we were really here to serve our fellow human being, that, you know, we want to all aspire to our highest goal, you know, that we care about one another, you know, we want to uplift humanity, not keep going down this path that we're currently spiraling down.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, I have more questions that I want to ask you on that, Karen. We are talking today with Karen Tate. She's an author, speaker, tour director, ordained minister, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do you ever worry about ever-increasing prices? About paying your mortgage? About dwindling savings and credit card debt? Well, we can help. Tune into Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair next week for The Money Therapist. Marcia Brixey is a regular on King 5 and Q13 News, and she's joining Vicky to discuss positive financial actions that can help you sleep at night. For more information, check out the show schedule at conversationslive.net and be sure to listen to The Money Therapist on Monday, September 8th from noon to 1.
Hi, I'm Vicky St. Clair and wanted to let you know about Book Talk, a weekly podcast brought to you by Conversations Live. In Book Talk, we'll be reviewing books from the eclectic to the banned to the challenging and, of course, to the easy and fun summer beach read. You can download Book Talk podcasts at 1150kknw.com under the podcast section of the site. If you'd like to be a guest reviewer for Book Talk, call me, Vicky, at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or drop me an email at info@conversationslive.net.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My special guest today is Reverend Karen Tate. She's an author, speaker, ordained minister. And we were talking before the break, we're talking about the resurgence of the goddess, and we were talking before the break about what the world would look like with goddess at the center. And Karen, you shared some thoughts with us on that. And one of the things I was surprised, because I was actually reading the essay from your website, Embracing the Feminine Consciousness, A Revolution of Thought. And one of the things that surprised me was how much you talk in there about healthcare and education and conscientious capitalism, things that we're not typically drawn to with religion, although we've certainly seen some of that over the past few years. But I wonder if you'd elaborate a little on that for us.
Well, you know, whether we're talking about religion or holy scripture, you know, remember that these are or deities. You know, these are thought by many to be archetypes, to be metaphors, to be allegory, to be literary devices to teach us, you know, to give us a roadmap for living. And I believe, and as many do, that you know, bringing the essence of the female back into the equation, back into cultures, back into religion, society, and spirituality, it would mean a shift away from this this dominator survival of the fittest world that we live in. And you think about the many faces of goddess across continents and cultures, and goddess doesn't say anywhere that you know, there will be no goddess but her, that there's only one face of the female divine. You know, there would be no crusades, no inquisitions, no fatwas with goddess, because she personifies diversity. I think if we were ever to look at ourselves as a human family or a global family, we could really do it under the umbrella of goddess, because no one, you know, is, you know, higher on the ladder than anyone else. You know, we're looking at trying to create level playing fields and partnerships where there aren't winners and losers, where both people can come out with, you know, some sort of a victory when they negotiate. You know, it's not about, you know, having this this sort of system where, you know, one person has all the power or, you know, has the biggest stick to dominate and manipulate all the other smaller players. You really sort of think of it as a mother with all her children, you know, and she's sort of embracing them and treating them all equally. And there's room for all the different faces of goddess on the earth. And, you know, there doesn't have to be just one. There's not just one Bible that, you know, that says there's one way. You know, we get away from this one-way mentality, and instead we start to look at, you know, the value of diversity and, you know, and really start living tolerance. And when you do that, when you have respect for one another, then, you know, I think war just becomes intolerable and politically incorrect. And you learn the power of compromise and negotiation rather than, you know, manipulation, you know, domination, and, you know, browbeating people because, you know, you have the most bullets and bombs.
What do you say to people who say, well, you know, that sounds great, but in the past we've had goddess cultures and, you know, that certainly has not been a utopia situation? Or what do you say to people who say, well, that sounds well and good, but idealistic and rather naive?
Well, you know, I totally agree. I absolutely do. But we have to start somewhere. You know, we have to realize that what we're doing is not working, and so many people are realizing that. And even though cultures in the past that venerated goddesses were not utopias, you know, we can certainly learn from our mistakes. You know, we're not destined to repeat the past, but we can cherry pick some of the best ideas that successful cultures in the past have used to uplift their societies. Because let's remember, some of these societies that did have goddess at the center, these were thriving civilizations. But you know, these warmongering, more powerful civilizations came in and obliterated them. So I'm not saying that a goddess culture is not one where you can defend yourself. I'm not saying that at all, because mm-hmm. all you have to do is look at some of the powerful goddesses like Sekhmet, Durga, Kali. These goddesses are archetypes of warrioresses. They can certainly you know, protect themselves and destroy evil. But there's also the other side of it. That's not always the first MO, so to speak. You know, you try to negotiate, you try to compromise first. And I guess if all else fails, you know, you do use power, but you use it with discernment. You certainly don't go to war over lies or over natural resources or to put money in people's pockets.
We're looking at what a world with Goddess at the center would look like. And I want to ask you, Karen, would it be an organized type of religion like we see now with Catholicism and, you know, Islam?
No, I don't think so. And most Goddess advocates I know don't want that. Because, you know, when things start to get too organized is when you start to, you know, get these hierarchical structures. You start to get, you know, people who say my way is the only way. I think one of the beauties of Goddess spirituality across the globe is its diversity. And the lack of, I don't want to say the lack of structure, but the lack of one way to do everything, one way to interpret everything, to define everything. You know, this allows for creativity, individualism, and it also teaches people, you know, to work together, that people who are different from you, you know, aren't to be devalued. They're to be learned from.
Now, in all religious beliefs, there's been a struggle between good and evil. I mean, that's a premise of which many religions have been based on. And obviously, in traditional Christian, that's heaven and hell, God and the devil. We also have, you know, I looked up a couple of Greek goddesses, like Ate and Kali, both goddesses of evil or evil and misfortune. How does evil play out in today's contemporary sacred feminism?
Well, first of all, Kali is not really a goddess of evil. You look at her, and I'm not an expert on the Hindu goddesses, but she's been a very misunderstood goddess, and that stems back to the time when Britain occupied India, and they did, you know, and they came to this foreign culture, and they saw this, you know, this black goddess with the skulls around her waist and the big red tongue, you know, and they didn't understand what they were seeing. They didn't understand, you know, the power that goddess had of life and death. And they just, you know, just this image scared the bejesus out of them. So mm-hmm. she became misunderstood. So she's not a goddess of, you know, of evil. I just have to, you know, clarify that. Honestly, I don't know of any goddesses that are actually, when properly identified, are considered evil. Now, you look that there are some goddesses of destruction. And for instance, you look at nature. Sometimes nature will be destructive. Some people say, well, you know, maybe it's, you know, it's a natural purge. You know, I honestly can't say, Vicki, that I have all the answers, but I certainly can tell you that within goddess spirituality, there is no devil. You know, that is a Christian-created construct. And, you know, goddess, you know, she is life and death. We say she is from the womb to tomb and then rebirth. In other words, she creates you. She, you know, she provides archetypes for you to live your life to at your fullest, to be the best that you can be. And then at death, you return to her, the tomb, so to speak, that metaphor, at death, only to be reborn again at rebirth. So she encompasses the whole cycle of life and rebirth.
Okay.
It's really a life of, I guess you could say goddess is really a life-affirming spirituality. It's not really an issue of good and evil.
Okay. Makes sense. So you mentioned earlier about men, the male and female god, goddess would partner like a good marriage. And you talk about the divine masculine. What does that look like?
Well, I like to think of two examples. First of all, I like to think of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And I'm not talking about them from the context of organized religion. I'm talking about them more from the context of writers like Margaret Starbird, who talk about them as the divine couple, you know, who personify, you know, the sacred feminine and divine masculine. Or you look at the Egyptian goddess Isis and her husband Osiris. They were credited, you know, one of one of their titles from ancient times were, they were the couple that taught men and women to love. They were the couple that brought civilization to humankind. You look at, some of these pairings of goddess and their husband or consort, and sometimes you can see, the beauty of what the two genders together can create. And that sort of goes back to my ideas about the warped nature of the story of the Garden of Eden. I really don't believe that a wise and loving God would have set one gender above the other from the start, the way the story in Genesis goes, when the woman was created from Adam. There are other stories that didn't make the Bible when the male and female were actually created simultaneously.
Right.
But that didn't serve the purpose of what the forefathers were trying to put forth, that that male was going to dominate female.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about how we get from here to there. I'd rather do that without interruption. So if we can take a break early, that would be good. Let's go to break. And we're talking today with Reverend Karen Tate. And I want to tell you her books are called Sacred Places of Goddess, 101 Destinations. And what's your newest book called, Karen?
It's called Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth.
And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Looking for new fiction authors or a different kind of book for good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? Then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk Podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. This week's Book Talk podcast is The Last Chinese Chef, written by Nicole Mones and reviewed by Cynthia Baxter. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple.
Spread the word. Your favorite shows are on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest today is Reverend Karen Tate. She's an author, speaker, ordained minister. And I want to just give out her website. It's www.karentate.com, T-A-T-E.com. And if you're interested in this topic, please go ahead and take a look at her website, because there's a ton of reading material up there. You're quite the prolific writer, Karen.
Oh, well, thank you. I get inspired on a topic and I just put pen to paper.
Yeah, it's very interesting looking through there. So we've been talking about what the goddess world would look like if we had a feminine consciousness rise again. And you are actively working to make that happen. What kind of things are you doing to make that happen? How do we get from here to there?
Well, first of all, education. Education is really the key. I mean, I think of myself as an example. Living in the Bible Belt, I was buffered from all of this. And I, was really felt angry for a while, because I realized, without knowing this missing piece of the puzzle, that I could have gone my entire life being duped, not even realizing, all of these other things that have opened up to me since, I've become aware of the feminine consciousness. And I know that there are lots and lots and lots of other people out there the very same way.
I read that your family thinks you're going to burn in hell because of your beliefs. Do they still believe that?
Over the years, I think there's been a little bit of wiggle room, you know. They say now, instead of saying I'm going to burn in hell, they say, well, we'll see when we get on the other side who was right.
Okay.
And you know what? I think we're both going to be right, because I have a feeling that we get what we expect. And if we expect to see Goddess on the other side, we're going to see Goddess. And if we expect to see Jesus or Jesus's father or Mary, that's who we're going to see.
Mm.
But no, I think education is the first key. And I also believe standing together is another important thing. When you look at the abolition movements and the suffrage movements, they were successful because people stood together. We have to really start voting in ways that support our belief system. You know, we can't vote out of fear. You know, we have to vote for people or not vote for people because they represent what we believe and where we want the world to go. You look recently in Washington, people were all up in arms about an immigration bill. Well, whether you were for or against it, you saw that what the power of the people can do. They shut down the switchboard system in Washington that day because they were irate over this immigration bill, and they got people's attention. You look at Lady Di, for instance. Yes, she lived a life of privilege, but she ushered in a more related way of treating one another in the world that has had profound effects in Britain. You think about when she died, the monarchy was going to basically seemed to let her death just sort of quietly pass by, but the people stood up and demanded that, more be done and that she be, acknowledged properly.
Well,
so what I'm saying is the people do have power.
Yeah, I think with Diana, Princess Diana, she brought such a lot of hope to people. And when she died, there was almost a significant loss of hope there, actually.
Well, that could be. And I think many of our societies across the world have lost hope because we feel powerless. But we're not powerless if we stand together in numbers. And I think that's what's really important. We have to put aside petty wedge issues. You know, we can't, red states and blue states, over issues of, abortion and flag burning and whether gays can marry. Those things are so minor when you think about the bigger issues that face the world. You know, sometimes we have to compromise and think about the big picture and not some of these smaller issues. Worry about them later.
Right. And you talk about education. Education is the key. Without organized religion, without religious leaders, how do you educate? How does that begin?
Well, I think it's up to all of us, quite frankly. I think it's up to teachers in school. It's up to people stepping up in their community and, giving talks to groups. It's about what you teach your children. Everything starts at the home. You know, they say the hand that rocks the cradle, can rule the world or steer the world. Well, I think especially it's up to women because I think this comes more naturally to us, more intuitively. We have to look at stepping up and being at the center and, trying to have more influence in the world because our hands shouldn't just be the ones that rock the cradles. They need to be the hands that broker the deals that change the world. Because, women are not going to be so likely to send their sons and daughters out to fight a war, I think, as men are prone to do.
Well, there have been many wars stopped by women.
Well,
some in Russia, some in France.
Well, and I had a guest on my radio show recently, Jean Shinoda Bolin, who informed me that there's actually a resolution at the UN that they utilize now and again. I mean, when we're in negotiations with, major countries like the United States, oftentimes it's just ignored. But, there's this resolution that says that they have to have a certain number of women in the negotiation because the women will find ways to compromise and negotiate.
Interesting. Do you have a favorite goddess, Karen?
Yes, yes, I do. Actually, it's the Egyptian goddess Isis and also the other Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. She's the lion-headed goddess. And many women today actually look to her as sort of an archetype of empowerment, to sort of help them step into their power, step into their passion, and claim their rightful place in the world.
Mm. Let's look at some modern cultures today that still worship the goddess. I know there are many in Hindu, but I'm not terribly familiar with that religion.
Well, yes, of course, there are many in India. India has been a place that have never forgotten the goddess. But you think in the Buddhist culture, there's Kuan Yin, the goddess of compassion. You go to Japan, and you have Amaterasu. In fact, she's the symbol on their flag. A lot of people don't realize it, but she's the sun. She's a solar deity. And she's a Shinto goddess. The Polynesians, still have goddesses. The Yorubans still have goddesses. The Native Americans do. There are lots of people who still have a feminine face of God in their paradigm. And I think this is a really important point to make, and I believe this is one of the ways that's going to shift us into a place where we do have more of a feminine consciousness in the world. More and more progressive Christians are starting to see Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene as the feminine face of God. So they are a way for, to bridge Christianity and alternative religions and come together on common ground.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was reading through some of the facts on your website, because you say even the most fundamentalist theologians and archaeologists are beginning to accept the idea that God had a wife or consort.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, you can look at even some of the more conservative archaeology magazines like Biblical Archaeology. Every now and again, you'll see an article about God's wife. Because when the men were worshiping Yahweh on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the women were baking cakes to the Queen of Heaven. So Goddess was right there.
And
it's really strange because most people, it's our perception. We think of the Temple Mount as the bastion of the three patriarchal religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. But Goddess was worshipped there too. She was worshipped there, as a Jewish goddess. You have Fatima, who is a powerful female image in Islam. Plus, you have you had Arabian goddesses. People might be surprised to learn that Muhammad's tribe actually worshipped the goddesses, and he changed those things. But there were Arabian goddesses. You had Roman goddesses on the Temple Mount. In fact, when I was researching my first book, Sacred Places of Goddess, I read from Muslim scholars that Kaaba stone that's worshipped at Mecca today, that meteorite that everybody circumambulates, around seven times and has to visit at least once in their lifetime, that very stone was first worshipped as a goddess stone. And the ancient Muslim scholars say when it was worshipped as a goddess stone, it glowed green. It's very interesting.
You've traveled the world more than once, I'm guessing. Is this part of your desire to educate?
Well, I started realizing as I traveled that once you open your eyes to other parts of the world, it changes you. It changes you forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're so isolated here in the United States with these two big oceans on either side. It's a shame how few people even have a passport in the United States. Our own president, for heaven's sake, I don't think had traveled very much, if at all, outside the United States.
Oh, really?
So, our awareness is so limited of other people and other cultures. And when you do get outside the United States, you see what these other people and cultures have to offer and the beauty and the diversity. It's really hard to drop a bomb on somebody you've just visited last year and you have some respect for.
True. Do you have a favorite place there? I'm guessing it might be Egypt.
Well, it started out that way, but mm-hmm. Once I went to Turkey, I really fell in love with Turkey. In fact, I'm leading a tour there in October for men and women for 2 weeks, and I can't wait to go back because Turkey is sort of this crossroads of cultures. You have so many different cultures there in one place, where like if you visit Egypt, it's primarily just Egypt, or Greece, it's just Greece. You know, Turkey, you just have a melting pot, and it just, it just piques my curiosity and my desire to just have a smorgasbord.
Well, it actually surprised me when I was flipping through the book and seeing how many religious places, how many sacred places there are in Turkey. Because I did think that was very male-dominated.
Well, it really just depends on how you look at it, at what time and culture, what time on the timeline. I mean, there's a really important site in Turkey called Çatal Hayuk that we believe could possibly have been sort of, what would you call it? Sort of an icon of egalitarian society where, male and females were, more equal partners. And that's become a sacred site within people, for people within goddess spirituality, because it's sort of like you can go, yeah, see that, we did it once before, we can do it again.
Right. Of all the goddesses, is there one that you would like to have dinner with?
Oh, wow. Well, I guess it just keeps going back to Isis. She just sort of, they call her She of 10,000 Names. I really do believe she sort of encompasses it all within her golden wings. And I think I could probably talk to Isis and get any question I had answered.
Hmm. I wanted just to touch a little on your new book, which is called Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. Now, I haven't seen that, but I was reading an essay called The Liberation of Surrender, which you wrote. And you said that while you were writing that book, you looked back over your patterns over the years of happiness, sadness, revelations, success, disappointment, and you realized that one of your patterns was your relationship with surrender. I wonder if you'd share your thoughts on that.
Well, I think I thought I was in control. I had this illusion of control. If I just dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's and made enough lists, life would certainly turn out exactly as I visioned.
Right.
And I realized, it doesn't. Because you can only alter so much. You have only so much within your control. Then at some point, you just have to release it and leave it for the universe. I think the most important part of it was the key is to always do your best, and that's all anyone or deity can ask of you. And the rest, you just have to sort of leave it to the universal wisdom, because there have been times that I had a vision for how something was supposed to turn out, and it didn't turn out that way. And initially I thought, oh, it's a failure, it's horrible. And then later on down the road, I saw it was really a blessing, and there was really a silver lining in that cloud.
Right.
So, we really just we have to have faith and trust, and I think a lot of people are petrified to make a mistake and not do things perfectly. But you know what? I don't think anyone expects perfection of any of us. I think what's more important is to do your best and get things done.
Yeah, I actually, you left me a couple of messages, and a couple of times you said, I'm a very detail-oriented Virgo. So I was very interested to read your essay on the liberation of surrender.
Well, I have that Virgo. It's a curse and a blessing.
So what would you like to tell our listeners about your new book, since I haven't seen it?
Well, I'd like to tell them that I tried to write a book that would help anyone who knows nothing about goddess pick it up and understand in very simple, everyday layman's language why the goddess is so important to us in contemporary culture, what she can mean to us in the world to have a better life, to have a better quality of life, and different ways to start to incorporate a feminine consciousness or goddess spiritual paradigm within our lives. And I divided the book into four sections as sort of a tribute to Mother Earth. And the four sections are earth, fire, air, and water. And in each section, like for instance, the earth section, it's about going, our experiential journeys as we went on sacred tours to sacred places, you know, what myself or the groups I was with experienced. The fire section is probably the most controversial section. You know, it talks about the politics within communities. It talks about how we transform as we empower ourselves and change. It talks about prophecy and faith and prayer and the power of prayer. The water section, which is about emotion, talks about, you know, how to bring love into your life, good relationships into your life, talks about how important ritual is to connect with deity. And the air section is about inspiration and, you know, how we can access the divine and be inspired by her and connect with her.
Sounds interesting. You say that today's divine feminine movement is not your mother's feminist movement. What do you mean by that, Karen?
Well, I don't mean to, you know, put anybody down by this. I really respect all the women, you know, that have paved the path and burned their bras and, you know, made the progress that, you know, we women today enjoy. But sometimes they did it without humor. And oftentimes, and I'm sure often it was because of, you know, the way the press would spin things and the status quo that gave them so much opposition, you know, really would make them look bad. But, you know, there was too much anger, I think. And I think what we're doing today, I sort of think of me and a lot of the other women that are my peers, we're sort of the new guard of the feminist movement. And we honor our foremothers tremendously. We do. They have sacrificed so much. But we have to shift the way we do things. We have to, you know, those of us who are spiritual have to stand shoulder to shoulder with those of us who are political. The two together have to, you know, and ecologists and people that care about these ideals we've been talking about, you know, we all have to stand together in solidarity. And we have to have humor and we have to have compassion and we have to mainstream this. And I think that's the key. I don't think it was ever really getting mainstreamed, and I don't think there was enough cohesion with other groups. And so, you know, we're trying a different tact.
Mm-hmm. I was actually surprised when I did a little research just to see how many women's Bibles there were out there, women-focused Bibles, women-focused religious websites. I was really quite shocked to see how many were out there.
Well, you know, women really are stepping up in ways like never before. They're really becoming activists on so many different levels. You know, whether it just be, you know, the new, you know, a fresh partnership ideals, you know, these sorts of things we're talking about teaching their children, or whether actually stepping out into the world and publishing books or, you know, joining political action groups and going to Washington. You know, women, I think, are going to be a major force in the future. And while some of them are still afraid, because, I get emails from women that are from the Midwest, and, you know, they identify with all of this, but they're so afraid to tell their friends. You know, this is awakening so many women on very deep levels of awareness, you know, socially, spiritually, you know, culturally. I mean, their conscience is being raised, and they're starting to rethink how they see themselves and their place in the world.
Yeah, this was interesting. I found this on your MySpace page. You would like to meet those who've gone to the great beyond. You'd like to meet Cleopatra the seventh. I'm not going to read all of them out. Alexander the Great and his mother, Jesus, Lee Harvey Oswald.
I just want to know if he really did it or not.
I was going to ask you, is that why you wanted to meet him?
Because I don't think he did.
And Edward R. Murrow.
Well, yeah, you know, these people, you know, not Lee Harvey Oswald, but, you know, these other people who were such important figures in history, you know, I would really like to hear their perspective of things. I mean, because, you know, we only know Cleopatra from, you know, from her enemies, the Romans, you know. Mm-hmm. I would really like to know Cleopatra from Cleopatra's perspective. And, you know, I would like to know some of these women that were the power behind the thrones. What was it like for them? You know, how did they manifest their power? And, you know, how did they help influence the world that they lived in?
Yeah. What's the one thing you know now that you wish you'd known 20 years ago when you set out on your journey, Karen?
Well, I guess the easy answer is I wish I had known about Goddess from day one. I just think the children that are growing up today that learn about Goddess from kindergarten up, you know, I think are going to be so much more whole and healthy. I guess I didn't realize early on what a powerful political ideal Goddess was. At first, it was just very personal. Mm. It was about, you know, a woman's personal fulfillment and personal empowerment and, you know, knowing that she was, you know, spiritually she was equal to man. But then, you know, once you take it from the, you know, from the individual, then you turn it outside yourself, and you start to see the impact this can have on the world. And I think that's been my driving passion about all of this.
Yeah, and you certainly sound very passionate. In 30 seconds, what would you like to leave our listeners with?
You know what? Go to a museum, and because that is her new sacred space until we have more temples in our neighborhoods. Go learn about her culture, her history, her images, her spirituality. Pick up books, pick up my book, pick up any book on Rhiann Eisler, Merlin Stone, Karen Tate. Read about the Goddess because she will change your life.
I thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your 20 years of independent study and all of the knowledge you have. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Vicki. I've enjoyed it.
And I want to thank each of you for tuning in today. Go to Karen Tate's website at karentate.com, and Tate is T-A-T-E, karentate.com. And her books are Sacred Places of Goddess, 101 Destinations, and Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing the Goddess. There's a ton of reading material up there. And you can also find out more about the tour that Karen is putting together for Turkey later this year. And if you've got questions or feedback on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or you can reach me through our website at conversationslive.net. Don't forget to check out Book Talk, our weekly book review podcast. You'll find those at 1150kknw.com. And thanks to Eric Ryder for keeping us live today. Please join me next Monday at noon. Until then, live well, live strong, and thank you for spending this hour with us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do you ever worry about ever-increasing prices? About paying your mortgage? About dwindling savings and credit card debt? Well, we can help. Tune into Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair next week for The Money Therapist. Marcia Brixey is a regular on King 5 and Q13 News, and she's joining Vicki to discuss positive financial actions that can help you sleep at night. For more information, check out the show schedule at conversationslive.net and be sure to listen to The Money Therapist on Monday, September 8th from noon to 1.